Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy the reading and sermon from our Sunday service, September 13th. The topic of Reverend Bruce Bode's sermon is Sundays and Beyond. Thanks for listening.
The beginning of a new church year invites one to review the identity and mission of one's religious organization. And so in light of that and out of curiosity, I looked at a number of the websites of other religiously liberal congregations to see what kind of motto or slogan or brief statement of identity and mission might go with their name. Here are some of the examples that I found. First, from First Unitarian Church in Portland. A liberal spiritual community in Portland since 1866. From the North Lake Unitarian Universalist Church in Kirkland, a spiritual home where all are welcome. From the Unitarian Universalist Church of Vancouver, Washington, home of the liberal religious spirit. Now, we at QUF don't currently have any such statement on our website. We do have this under, if you'll see it on the front of the bulletin cover today, to sustain a sacred place within a just and caring community. That was something that we had agreed on in 2003. My own statement for myself of the identity and mission of this place from the beginning, it goes like this: QUUF, a center for liberal religion on the Quimper Peninsula. And then this past year, I added a little phrase to that to take account of the kinds of challenges that I think our future holds for us. And so my personal statement of identity and mission now reads, QUUF, a center for liberal religion on the Quimper Peninsula, engaging global change. Engaging global change, a little bit more of a mission in that regard. Then, in my website search, I also noted that a number of liberal congregations had triplicate phrases that express in quick compass their sense of identity and mission. For example, this one I found from the church that I used to be a minister at in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Fountain Street Church. Their statement reads, "Free the mind, grow the soul, change the world." From the Unitarian Universalist Church of Spokane, "Create community, find meaning, work for justice." From the Westside Unitarian Universalist Church in Seattle, "Feeding your spirit, expanding your mind, working for justice." And finally, from the University Unitarian Church in Seattle, "Awakening spirit, nurturing hope, and inspiring action." Again, to this point, we don't have any such three-phrase slogan on our website, but I did come up with something that I don't think we'll use it, but it's lively to me, from a poem that I found by Gary Snyder last year. These three phrases: "Stay together, learn the flowers, go light." So, they are found at the end of a poem called "For the Children," published in 1974 in his book Turtle Island. Here's the little poem, "For the Children" by Gary Snyder. "The rising hill, the slopes of statistics lie before us. The steep climb of everything going up, up, as we all go down. In the next century or the one beyond that, they say, our valleys, pastures, we can meet there in peace if we make it. To climb these coming crests, one word to you and your children. Stay together. Learn the flowers. Go light." Here in early September, many religious organizations, like schools, begin a new year. It's not a new year that corresponds with the calendar new year, but it has the feeling of a new year, the freshness of starting over. That's the case here with us after a more relaxed summer program. As of today, our programming ramps up as we begin our new church year. And as we begin that new year, I like to take a broad look at the nature of religion and the purpose of our particular religious organization. My message this morning in this regard breaks into three parts. First, to look at what the religious enterprise is in general. What is religion in relation to our species? Then secondly, to look at how liberal religion addresses this function. What's the liberal approach to the religious enterprise? And then thirdly, I'll take a little bit of time to talk about how we here in this place engage that religious enterprise. My view on the nature and role of organized religion is expressed in the responsive reading that I had us read this morning from my mentor, Duncan Littlefair, and from that sermon. And I mentioned in that introduction to the reading that to get at the primary function of religion, Littlefair first listed its secondary functions, six of them. He talked about what religion is not in terms of it being primary. First, the function of religion is not to educate people. It's not to direct and control the individual and society. It's not to guarantee success. It's not to promise salvation. It's not to inspire, and it's not to console or comfort. Those are not the primary functions. Of course, over the millennia, religion has been involved in all of those things, and they've been very important to many persons. But none of them, says Littlefair, are the primary thing. So what is it that's primary? His response: religion at its core is the attempt to make sense out of life, to sort out meaning, and to address its fundamental questions: what is the nature of life, who am I, and what is the good? Now, I am now older than my mentor was at that time when I was his ministerial intern. He was 66 at the time. That was back in 1978. But after these many years of being a minister, I still think that he's right on the first function of religion. Like Littlefair, I regard the core task of a religious institution as that of keeping before us life's most basic questions of meaning and value. I don't want to take anything away from all the other functions of organized religion, but I believe that what religion is first of all called to do is to put before us the enduring human questions that have to do with our grounding, our centering, and our valuing. That is, seeking a place to stand in the vastness of time and space. Trying to discern a center in the midst of the swirl and busyness of life. And then reflecting deeply and connecting deeply with that which is worthy of our reverence, our devotion, and our allegiance. And to me, the answers to these fundamental questions are never final. But as perennial questions, to some degree, our answers are found in nuancing these questions, in coming back to them over and over and over again. Each new year, as the year circles, to come around to that question, where am I now with respect to these basic existential questions of life? What do they mean to me now? I'll return to those answers in a bit, but I want to say something first about why I think addressing the perennial human questions of grounding, centering, and valuing is the primary function of religion. And it's because, as I understand it and define it, we are a religious species. And these are the fundamental questions that arise within such a species. And we are a religious species because we have been freed from strict instinct. And like it or not, we must engage these issues of meaning, value, and purpose in our life. We cannot not face those questions. From early childhood, we wonder about our place on earth and under the heavens. And confronted with the knowledge of our own mortality, we are driven, as the Reverend Dr. Forrest Church says, to explore the mysterious ground of our own being. And the primary questions that arise from those conditions then are these: who am I and how should I live? And what should I ultimately serve, revere, and value? And what meaning, if any, may be ascribed to my life and to larger life? And then finally, how am I part of the whole? How is the whole part of me? And how can we participate in greater wholeness? These are the quintessential existential religious questions that have to do with our basic orientation to life, our overall world and life view, our entire faith structure. And the answers given to these questions of meaning, value, and purpose by the multitudes of religions and religious organizations, and they are multitudinous. For example, the World Encyclopedia, the Christian World Encyclopedia, second edition, identifies 10,000 distinct religions present now on our earth. Christianity is one of those 10,000, and it has 33,800 denominations under that one umbrella alone. And Unitarian Universalist in this encyclopedia is listed as one of those denominations under the category marginal Christian, which puts us and our Red Rooster importance, as Robinson Jeffers might say, puts us in our place. But what I was going to say is that the answers given to these existential religious questions and concerns vary enormously from religion to religion and from time, from different times and from different places. Now, the liberal approach to these religious questions, the approach that characterizes our religious association, tries to take into account this welter of religions and this great variety of responses to the religious questions. And so the liberal approach is not based on having a common creed, not having a common doctrine. That's difficult for those who are coming from doctrinal basis to understand. It's also difficult for us often to explain, and I'm going to talk about that a bit more in 2 weeks in my sermon. But the flag under which our liberal ship sails advertises that our unity, that which holds us together as sailors on a single ship, that unity is not based on a common creed, but rather on a shared way of treating each other, affirming, as our first principle says, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And in understanding, as our forebear Francis David from 400 years ago in Transylvania put it, we need not think alike to love alike. My sermon last year on this opening Sunday at this time concerned itself with that theme. It was titled The Heart of Liberal Religion, Love Beyond Belief. And the point I was making there was that our approach is not, first of all, an approach of the head, but of the heart. It's not, first of all, what you think, what you believe, what you can put into propositions that's important, but it's how you act, how you care, how you are filled with loving kindness, how your heart is transformed. And so belief is not primary in liberal religion, and yet one still needs a way to connect, a way to orient oneself. One needs a compass to steer by, a discipline, a practice, a method by which your heart may be transformed. One needs a way in. And so I might ask you, what is your way in? What lens or lenses do you find useful for focusing reality? Through what window or windows do you prefer to view reality? 12 years ago, when I came here in the fall of 2004, the first sermon series I delivered was on the notion of four faiths within Unitarian Universalism, which were named humanism, naturalism, mysticism, and theism. And this structure was based on something that I had picked up from the Reverend Fred Campbell, a retired Unitarian Universalist minister who had served 11 congregations in 31 years, most as an interim minister. But he had discovered in those congregations that he had served that there were four basic faiths, four different approaches to life and their variations, and he named them humanism, naturalism, mysticism, and theism. And I found, too, in the fall of that year, 2004, when I led an adult religious education class that accompanied that series, I found, too, that those four faiths were here in this congregation, and of those who took the class, they were pretty much equally divided in those four faiths. That presents a bit of a challenge to one who is a minister. How do you assist persons in deepening themselves in their particular perspective? Because people, rightly so, if they're going to be part of a religious organization, they want to be part of one that helps them to deepen in their orientation, in their religious faith, in their religious philosophy, in their spiritual discipline, if they're in their life stance. The different groups name it differently. Part of the challenge right there. So, to illustrate that challenge as a minister and to have a little fun, about 6 years ago, this was in the spring of 2009, while we were building this sanctuary at that time, I gave a sermon series, another five-part sermon series, in which I addressed this issue, because I had been saying over the years, if I knew that I were addressing only the humanists in this congregation, or only the naturalists, or only the mystics, or only the theists, I would have a very, very different service. And so I decided to do that. I took the theological question, the question of God, and 1 week I addressed it in humanist perspective, then the question of God in naturalist perspective, the question of God in mystic perspective, and finally, on Easter, if I recall, the question of God in theist perspective. Not only did I give a different sermon to each of those four groups, but I dressed differently, I arranged the chairs differently, I used different kinds of music and readings, and it was either ritual heavy or ritual light, depending on what group I was speaking to. All great fun. So where are we now with respect to this diversity within unity? And how can we maintain and develop this diversity within unity as a creative tension and not a fracturing or fragmenting tension? In the last couple of years, within the staff and also within some of the board task forces and committees, we have started using the phrase that is the title of this sermon, Sundays and Beyond. And the idea here is that this is a way of attempting to speak about the diversity of ways that members and friends of this congregation address these quintessential questions that have to do with grounding, with centering, and with valuing. And of course, it doesn't all happen on a Sunday morning. We also have other services and gatherings that are aimed at deepening a given perspective. So, for example, we have our AHA group, agnostic, humanist, atheist. I think they're in their seventh year now, and what they do is twice a month, they invite all of those who are interested to share a common meal. And following the meal, they have an open-ended and engaged discussion on religious, philosophical, ethical, moral, and political issues. They represent the humanist perspective. Then we also have the contemplative services. The first one for this year begins this evening. More inward, silence. That is closer, I would say, to the mystical perspective. Once a month, we have Dances for Universal Peace. This is more devotional, inward, but also movement. The body is engaged. And then we have, and we've been trying to develop it, hope to develop it this year, aren't we, Amy? And Victoria, services for younger adults. We did a little bit of that last year, and that would be another way of deepening. We also have Buddhist groups, meditation groups. And in all of these, like our Sunday services, in all of those, everyone is welcome. They're open to all. So it's not just Sunday morning. It's Sundays and beyond. And organizationally, we've been talking about, and maybe this year, hopefully, to form a Sundays and Beyond Council. The idea here would be to have representatives from these different perspectives meet together on an occasional basis to talk about best practices, to discuss logistical concerns, and to have a clear organizational connection. Beyond Sundays and Beyond are all the other groups and program offerings that we have here in this fellowship. So here we're talking about our adult learning programs, our ELPS classes, our affinity groups, our covenant groups, all of which you can sign up for today. There are ongoing groups and other things as well, all of them to provide opportunities to deepen and enrich our lives. In addition to that, we have different committees through which you can be of service in building the loving community, either here in this fellowship or beyond our fellowship walls. It's possible for people to connect with our fellowship simply and only through these different groups and programs, and we welcome that. But still, for me, the center, I believe, are these Sunday services, because here all are called together to be in the same place and to address in one way or another these quintessential existential questions of our life, the deepest ongoing questions and concerns that we can think about, addressing them in word, in song, in silence, and in ritual, addressing them in heart, in mind, in body, and in soul. And by addressing them, as I said, to have a place to stand in before the face of the universe, to discern a center in the midst of the swirl of things, and finally to deeply reflect and to deeply engage, to deeply connect with that which is worthy of our reverence, worthy of our allegiance, and worthy of our devotion. Amen. So may it be.